The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Give myself to you completely.
Good morning and welcome to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and the purpose of this show is to take an hour each Saturday morning and deepen our understanding about different parts of the natural world that surrounds us. So longtime listeners know that the mission of Radio Kingston is all about getting to know our neighbors and hearing their stories and expanding our perspective by listening to others who may have a different lived experience than we do. And so for this program, we go one step further and make sure that our definition of community includes the more than human world that we're immersed in. And this is made easier because we are fortunate here in the Hudson Valley to be surrounded by such a rich variety of ecosystems and vibrant biodiversity from the Hudson River estuary and the lowland valleys of the Hudson, to the Catskill Mountains and the Berkshires and beyond. So we have abundant opportunities to explore and engage with nature of all kinds. But a driving force of this show is highlighting the fact that nature isn't just something that's out there somewhere in the distance, but it's also right here, right now, wherever we are. Even on Broadway here in Midtown Kingston, we are nature and we are in nature, whatever we're doing. And so the invitation with this program is to slow down just a little bit and look a little closer than we may otherwise do, even if you're just stepping out your front door, because inevitably you will discover some fascinating creature doing something interesting and unexpected, or you might catch some fleeting ecological phenomenon that wasn't happening the day before in that same exact spot. So the way we do this on this show is every week we bring in guests who have developed some sort of expertise in some corner of the natural world. So we've had scientists, artists, educators, conservationists, birders, outdoor adventurers of all sorts, nature nerds extraordinaire. And we invite them in to share their stories and their knowledge in the hopes that people might come away with a little deeper understanding of what we might encounter when we step outside. And so this is all because we know that people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. So we're going to begin, before I introduce our guests who are sitting here patiently live in the studio.
Wow, I feel so inspired right now. That was amazing.
Thank you, Bowser. We're going to start with a little section called Who's About Town. And Who's About Town is sort of like the society pages, but for the more than human world. Or you could think of it as sort of an ecological snapshot. What's happening, in the world around us since we had our last episode a week ago. The first thing and the most obvious is the heat wave. That was a couple very, very intense days. I think actually it was historic. I think that we had the hottest day in definitely more than a decade. And so I know I was lucky to be able to head for the hills. I have some dear old friends visiting in town this week. And so we spent one day going to Blue Hole over at the headwaters of the Rondout, which was absolutely perfect. The water was freezing cold on a 100-degree day, highly recommended. And we got to go up to Colgate Lake on another day, which is, I'm from the West Coast. At Colgate Lake, I feel like, is the closest thing to the beach that we have. Beautiful, peaceful Catskills immersion. And the songbirds were very abundant. We saw a beautiful water snake hunting in the water. And a couple other things that are happening right now, if we look around, up at a little higher elevation, the mountain laurel are in full bloom. And they are just so cool. Just what a geometric, unique sort of flower they are. And it's interesting, too, to see the way that the elevation affects the seasons. Because here in Midtown Kingston, the catalpa trees were in, absolute announcing themselves full bloom, you know, a week, even 2 weeks ago. But now they're pretty much all finished. You don't see that happening right now. But if you drive up 28, just, you know, 15 minutes, you gain a tiny little bit of elevation, the catalpas up there are in full bloom. So you can see that staggering of the season based on the elevation. And we, of course, that's the reason we went to Colgate Lake, because it's, you know, a couple thousand feet higher. And it was, I think, 15 degrees cooler than it was down here in the valley. So that was really neat. And yeah, right around here, you know, in people's gardens, the black-eyed Susans are blooming, the echinacea, the hydrangea, the yucca, a whole bunch of true summer species are really out. But for this Who's About Town, I'm going to stick very local and talk about some absolute weirdos that I have observed. Actually, these are at my house in Midtown Kingston this week. And so the first one is a creature called an ant lion. And you may know what they are, or you may have seen them and not known what their name is. But if you have seen them, you've probably seen a little reversed cone in some sand by your house. It's maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches wide, and about an inch deep. And it looks like maybe you thought ants did that, but it's very tidy, very symmetrical. Clearly, it was an intentional creation, right? And so an antlion really is a strange, strange creature. There are over 2,000 species of them in the world. Most of them are tropical, but we have a couple of them up here in the temperate zones. And they like to go under maybe a ledge, or they want to be out there. Of course, they're outside, but they want to be like if your house overhangs, because the structure that they build will be destroyed easily in the rain. So they like to have a covered spot. And then they also need just the right, you know, particulate size of sand to build their little trap. And if you've seen the scene in Star Wars where there's the giant cone and they slide down the sand and then the monster at the bottom grabs you, I'm sure that George Lucas was inspired by these creatures, because it's exactly the same thing.
I believe that many nerds out in your listening world are yelling Sarlacc pit at you right now.
Okay. That's what it was called. Great. Well, it's exactly the same thing. And so these are little tiny monster creatures. They actually look quite a bit like a dragonfly, which it's the larval form that makes these little structures. And their official name is doodlebug. I didn't make that up. They're called doodlebugs. And so they make this perfectly, and it's the angle of repose that they create with this little sand pit. And that means that if you're an ant or another small insect, if you cross the threshold of the little hole that they've created, no matter what you do, it's just going to bring you down because of the, you know, and so once they get to the bottom, these little doodle bugs have giant pincher mandibles, and then chomp, they get you. So yeah, they're absolutely fascinating. They have worldwide distribution, but they're easily overlooked. But they're not uncommon. And so I encourage you to look around, and when you see them, realize that you're seeing a crazy predator in action. Okay, another weirdo that I experienced in Midtown Kingston this week was we walked outside in our front yard, and there was a bright orange. I thought it was a piece of trash that had blown in. It was like traffic cone orange, this elongated tube coming out of the ground with sort of a bent witch's cap kind of like top on it. And I had no idea what it was, but I pulled out the trusty iNaturalist app, which is a free app you can have on your phone that'll identify really almost anything you point it at, from a bird to a tree to a mushroom. And iNaturalist immediately understood that this was a wrinkly stinkhorn. We've gone from doodlebugs to stinkhorns, but the wrinkly stinkhorn is this electric orange mushroom. The genus that it's in is called Phallus, when you see it, you can understand. And it's known to produce this sort of quote-unquote malodorous goo that attracts insects. And indeed, the one we had in our front yard was covered with insects. And it does that because then the insects get covered in its spores and therefore distribute the spores, because that's the only way it knows how to do that. Okay, so lastly, and even weirder, was just a few days ago in the backyard. Walked outside and I thought our neighbor's dogs had gotten into our yard and thrown up, because there was kind of a putrid pile of what looked like dog vomit on the edge of our garden bed. And, you know, first was kind of like, well, that's gross, and, you know, should try to clean that up. It looked like half digested dog kibble covered in this kind of mucousy slime. But once again, pulled out iNaturalist and pointed it at it, and it immediately identified it as dog vomit slime mold. That's its name, dog vomit slime mold. And this, I have to just like take a moment to kind of put slime molds into perspective, because so the first thing I read was that, like many slime molds, the cells of this species typically aggregate to form a plasmodium, which is a multi-nucleate mass of undifferentiated cells that move in an amoeboid-like fashion during the search for nutrients. So slime molds are not mushrooms. And in fact, if we go back to our, you know, high school, you know, the taxonomy of life, I remembered learning a mnemonic: King Philip crossed over France going south, which is kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species, right? So every species in the world, you know, it fits within that nested hierarchy of understanding. And when you, so of course there's millions and millions of species, there's fewer genuses, on until you go up to kingdom, there's only six. And so all of life fits into one of those. Two of them are bacteria, one of them is animals, all animals fit in one kingdom. Another one is plants, all plants are in a kingdom. And then the other one is fungi. Now that's a weird enough kingdom on its own. If we could go down that rabbit hole another time. But the sixth kingdom is Protista, and that's where slime molds live. And they are a eukaryotic creature. They branched off way before, like, you know, humans are more closely related to mushrooms and fungi than we are to plants even. But the Protistas are down even evolutionarily further towards the base. So absolute strange plasmodial weirdos. And I think that both of these strangers came in the mulch that we had put down, but they are both native. You know, very, very interesting, and things that you might see, especially if you have put mulch around your plants. Okay.
Man, I have learned so much already. This is great.
Reminds you of being back in high school.
Well, it sounds like an interesting high school then. Good. All right, let's see. Before I switch gears here, I just want to do one more. I'll do one plug that if you don't have plans yet for tonight, the Wild Earth Gala is happening this evening. And Wild Earth is a wonderful organization, does environmental education for children and actually up through adult regionally. We've had Omari Washington, the executive director, on the program before. And so tonight, I know there's tickets still available for, it's called Moss and Moonlight, and it's at Liberty View Farm outside Highland. And it's just going to be a beautiful evening. There's going to be a candlelight dinner of farm-to-table food. There'll be dancing, and it's all to raise funds to support nature accessibility for youth and families across the Hudson Valley. So you can just, if you're interested, bring your partner, bring your kids. It's a quintessential summer Saturday evening that you can have in an orchard tonight outside Highland. So you can look up wildearth.org. Okay, I'm going to now introduce our guests who are sitting in the studio with us. First, thank you for taking time, Matthew Putnam, to be here in the studio with us Saturday morning.
Yes, good morning, Laurel. I sure appreciate it. It'd be nice to just get a little educational segment about what is going on this weekend and the true past of where everybody now resides. Just a little glimpse.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Matthew is a member of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican American Indians, and he's a leader in this amazing series of programs that are happening this weekend, actually starting right now, in New Paltz. and it's called the New Netherland Marketplace Living History Event 2025. So we're going to learn a lot more about what that is and really encourage folks to get out. But I will say that Matthew was born and raised and lives on the Stockbridge Munsee Reservation in Wisconsin. And he's known for teaching boxing to youth, as well as tribal history, genealogy, building canoes and visiting elders. And Matthew is dedicated to working in his community in any way he can that benefits the people. And so looking forward, I know Matt hopes that genuine education of who his people are can be better understood in mainstream society, and also that young ones in his community take an interest in learning more about their culture and traditions so that that traditional knowledge is not lost over time.
Correct.
So, yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And I'm going to, before I ask my first question to you, Matt, I'll also introduce Chris Bowser, the one and only, the legendary, affectionately known as Bowser by folks who know him.
And non-affectionately at times.
Okay. So even just to describe your position is a mouthful, but I'm going to do it. Chris Bowser is the education coordinator for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Hudson River Estuary Program and the Hudson River National Estuarine Research Reserve, which is in partnership with the Water Resource Institute at Cornell University.
Well, folks, that's all we have time for today.
Yeah. That's a mouthful. I know. I'll leave out the rest of this bio, but it's impressive. Chris is amazing. He is a contagiously enthusiastic advocate for the natural world. In fact, I think we're on episode 58 now, but Chris was our episode 9 guest, and we have a whole episode diving deep into the American eel. And so all of our episodes of this program are archived at radiokingston.org, and I would absolutely encourage you. In fact, he brought in live eels to the radio program.
Works great on radio.
But you know, definitely get in the field with this man if you can, and check out that episode if you're interested. So all right, Matthew, I would love to maybe start with you know asking you to just set up a little bit of a foundation and share with folks a little bit about your personal life story that has led you to do the work that you're doing here today.
Well, I guess to simply start that out, I grew up half the time in my grandmother's house. She was a very devout Christian lady, but she also kept tribal history, genealogy, just a wealth of information. And she was kind of like everybody's auntie on the reservation, and everybody showed up at the door. So since a young person, I was able to listen to, you know, many conversations of family, non-family members, just people who generally came and visited, sitting down, talking, and usually once they left, then it was kind of going back through what they talked about. So I understood what it was, and so it kind of, what'd you say, that was a simpler way to ingrain it in my mind. And it very much, you know, interested me to pass that information on, you know, as I got older. And as I get older, I try to pass as much as I can on and things I've learned. And the sad thing is when you're young like that, you don't remember everything, you know. That's what I look back on a lot, you know, because sometimes I can get a half a conversation or I'm missing a piece of a story. But usually by talking to people from other communities or other relatives or just other people in our community, you can put it back together, you know.
Well, you know, my guess is that some of our listeners are vaguely familiar with the history of colonization and displacement of the original people here, but I'm guessing, you know, most people don't understand the true story. So I'm wondering if you could, you know, talk a little bit about that, you know, this is your homeland, but you're born and raised in Wisconsin, and you know, just maybe familiarize folks a little bit with that how that came to be.
So to break that down really in a nutshell, you know, we understood what was going to happen before colonization happened. The easiest way to say it is, I guess, it was prophesied. So there was there was somewhat of a preparation, but I mean, when colonization truly hit, it was just shocking, you know. And just give me a second here. Yeah, I'm just trying to give you the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
But even though we were a large tribal group, depending on what group of colonists came here, like this weekend we're dealing with Huguenots, mm-hmm. which are, you know, French Protestants, but they were Swedes. You know, the Dutch had a huge hand. This was New Amsterdam back in the day. Mm-hmm. Then the English. So it kept changing hands. You know, it was basically like the World War coming to your door, when your world was not part of the old world. Mm-hmm. And so, because of disease and new weaponry, you know. Mm-hmm. We were totally shocked and devastated right from the get-go. And, with the decimation of our numbers, you know, we became pawns. And the World War game.
Mm-hmm.
And the colonists, all they wanted was riches. And that's the nicest way to say it. Timber, you know, they wanted precious minerals, which... Obviously, there's not a lot of gold or diamonds on the coast here, but, you know, as he moved inland, you know, they wanted to see what was inland. So by the divisions of the different groups of us Native Americans here, you know, they divide and conquer, you know. They pitched us against one another, and they slowly but, you know, efficiently moved in, and America, in the end, America's born. We don't have much time here this morning. But, you know, however it did happen, good, bad, ugly, we have the most wonderful country on earth.
Thank you for sharing the pieces of this painful history. We're going to take a quick break to hear some words from our community, and then we're going to return to this conversation.
All right. Hi, I'm Aviana.
And I'm Carlita.
We're fellows at Place Corps.
Do you have an adventurous spirit?
Are you looking for an alternative to college or post-high school experience?
Join Place Corps Kingston Fellowship.
At Place Corps, we believe the best way to learn is by doing.
We offer a 6-month exploratory gap year fellowship for people ages 18 to 21.
The program takes place in the real world and equips young adults with real-life skills to take on the next chapter of their lives.
Fellows discover more about themselves, their places, and the kind of work they want to do to help create a better and more sustainable world.
Fellows also have an opportunity to earn up to $6,000 in learning grants.
If you're an explorer looking for your place in the world, join Place Corps.
Apply now at placecorps.org.
Radio Kingston.
Many voices.
Many voices.
Many voices.
One community.
Hi, this is Peter Wetzler from Sound Forms, Classical Music and Beyond. We're on Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. here on Radio Kingston. Each week we travel through time with music from the Middle Ages and Renaissance through classical, romantic, and contemporary classical periods to new music that's happening today, both locally and around the world. We'll also feature live performances and conversations with composers and performers from our local Kingston area and beyond. That's Sound Forms, Classical Music and Beyond with me, Peter Wetzler, Sunday afternoons from 2 to 4 here at Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 1079, and anytime at radiokingston.org.
In partnership with Kingston Library, World's End Comics is hosting their graphic novel book club for adults at World's End Comics, Saturday, July 12th. This club is for seasoned fans of graphic novels and for those new to the format, where artists' visuals meet compelling narratives. July's selection is Maggie the Mechanic, a Love and Rockets book by Jaime Hernandez. This book contains some of the earliest stories in the long-running and ongoing series Love and Rockets, a sci-fi saga featuring characters of varying body types that age in real time as the comic progresses. Copies of this book can be borrowed from Kingston Library or purchased with a 10% discount at World's End Comics. No registration is required to attend the book club. Graphic Novel Book Club, Saturday, June 21st at, I think that means July 12th, at 3 p.m. at World's End Comics, 319 Wall Street in Kingston. For more information, find World's End Comics on Facebook. Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and we are joined today by Matt Putnam and Chris Bowser, and we're having a conversation about about a lot of things. Specifically today, we are highlighting an incredible event that's taking place right now and all day today and all day tomorrow down on Huguenot Street in New Paltz. And I'm going to read a little quick description of the event, and then we're going to talk some more about it and hear from Matt about what actually is you can experience if you go down there. So members of the federally recognized Lenape, Delaware communities, which currently reside in Wisconsin, Oklahoma, and Ontario, will be returning to their sacred homelands to portray the life of their ancestors and their economic relationship with European settlers. Their camp will have ongoing open fire cooking, cordage making, bow shooting, flint napping, arrow making, and hide tanning demonstrations throughout the weekend. Each day, tribal members will offer a cultural stomp dance demonstration in which visitor participation is encouraged. North American dingoes, also known as the Carolina dog, will be present and used to discuss Eastern woodland hunting traditions and more. Living historians portraying European merchants, performers, and craftspeople will offer demonstrations on woodworking, hearth cooking, tailoring, wampum making, spinning wool, and more. This year's marketplace will include displays of camp gear and furs, clothing, wooden bowls, children's toys, and other items for sale. Musicians will regularly perform to crowds, and just like years past, children and adults alike will line up to enjoy a classic Dutch folk tale via a rare show, an exhibition of pictures and objects viewed through a small hole in a box. Scheduled programming include demonstrations on 17th century martial arts and cutlass fighting, a quack show, and a portrayal of Adrian van der Donk. Okay. So Matt, returning, you know, this is a fascinating event. You know, obviously, here we have, European settlers, American Indians, formerly enslaved folks, you know, putting on an event about a past that is not a harmonious story. You know, there's a lot of pain and strife, you know, in this story, and yet it seems that this event is a real coming together to try and give some truth to that story and show the different sides of it. And it feels very gracious, your part in that, to participate. And I wonder if you could tell us a bit about, what folks might learn or experience if they come out today or tomorrow to New Paltz.
Well, if you can bring your children, obviously they're going to just love to see people in different dress, from Native American, African, Caucasian, regardless of what country they come from, they're going to be able to view how people carried themselves and dressed in those times. And that'll be the most, I guess, attractive thing to young people. To the older people, it's going to probably move away from the clothing and to what words they actually have to say, or what crafts they're teaching, or what they're talking about. So it's gonna, go from very simple to very in depth. If people want to take the time to have that conversation, they're gonna be able to learn an awful lot today. But it's just a small window,
sure,
into life.
Well, and it sounds like, I know there is scheduled programming and there's things happening at certain times, but it also sounds like a bit of sort of an open invitation. Come by anytime.
Yes.
And engage is the idea.
Yes. 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 Anytime you want to come through, just take a walk through it. If you don't wish to speak to anybody and just view what's going on, feel free to come down and just take a walk. It's not going to hurt, but I'll pretty much guarantee you're going to want to talk to some faction of this camp here, because it's going to be quite interesting.
So this is the fourth year that this has been happening?
Yes, the fourth year. Yeah. And I've been a part of it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice way for folks from different positions in the country to get together, to work together.
Yeah. And so you, I know...
And teach.
You've traveled here, I believe, other members of your community and maybe even your family have traveled as well?
So there'll be tribal members here from related communities, from Ontario to Oklahoma. And to be very specific, the Munsee Nation of Ontario, Delaware Nation of Ontario, Stockbridge Munsee, Band of Mohicans of Wisconsin, Delaware Tribe of Indians from Oklahoma, and Delaware Nation of Oklahoma, and then also the Shawnee. So all related peoples.
And so I'd love to, maybe for folks who might not understand the history, you mentioned, so, you know, the original folks of this land here in this area of the Hudson Valley are now in a few different distinct places.
Yes.
That you just named.
Yes.
And, you know, a bit of my understanding about the history was that, you know, of course it was a brutal and forced displacement. But it did happen in such a way that there were people were moved in whole communities, so that those traditions and language were moved with them.
Yes.
And so they are now carried on in these other landscapes, right?
Yeah. So getting back to what Laurel's saying here, in this area particularly were Munsee, the Esopus Munsee, mm-hmm. which is the oldest Algonquin dialect in North America. Hmm. And they would be also viewed as the grandfather of all other Algonquin nations. And then the Mohican is next door, and then Delaware to the south. But Delaware is just a different dialect of Munsee. And we're just dialects and related groups is who we are. And loosely affiliated, you know, but all being tied together by blood. So through these communities that Laurel's mentioning here, there are family lines running through all these communities. So if we sit down and have that talk like I spoke about with my grandmother's house, by the end of the conversation, we're gonna find out some way somehow we're related, you know. And this gives us an opportunity also to sit down with one another and to discuss those things. So it's actually, you know, it's like Laurel's talking about, it's kind of actually like a healing also.
And I know that looking at some of the work you do, that genealogy is one of your one of your passions, and I'm curious, sort of, you know, how you got inspired and what some of the things you've learned from studying that.
as was mentioned, we were removed so many times from where we originally lived that you don't know who you are unless you look into the past. And even if you're on, like, say a reservation where we grew up, you know, and you look at the different members of the community and you think about, you know, who they are, where they came from, what ties us together is the bond of blood. And by sitting down and having those conversations at the table, you know, we find out who we are, you know, and how closely interrelated we are, and that's the small bond that had held us together all this time, you know. And that's the only way we survived, is by family, you know, close family, distant family, you know. When I talk about these five communities here, I can actually mention one grandfather who was born in Ontario, moved to Wisconsin, moved to Kansas, and made it all the way to Oklahoma, you know. And yeah, his bloodline carries through, you know, all the communities, you know. But also, I can actually go back into the Dutch side of the family. Mm. Dutchess County, you know, Fort Putman in New York. I can... intermarriage was a key part of colonization, even though you can say... we can talk about everything it destroyed, you know, that was also one way of survival, was intermarriage. In one way, you almost had to walk in both worlds under some circumstances just for survival, or you had to have members of the community who could walk in both worlds, mm-hmm. and have that conversation on both sides of the fence, you know, just to try to get along. Yeah. That's all it was, is simply getting along, you know, and that was day to day. That was literally day to day back then. Mm-hmm. It's not like it is in America now, you know. where people are relaxed, have a nice home and stuff, you know. It was day to day, getting moved forcibly or choosing to move, you know, that was just a way of life. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, hunting or fishing for your dinner, you know, you had to be prepared.
I'm curious what, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, but knowing that this area was your homeland, you know, what stories were told or what your experience was of this distant place that you hadn't lived experience.
I guess most all of us there, you know, just want to know, you know. We all, if we sit down next to each other, we all assume we all came from a certain destination out here. But the reality was the world was so much bigger. You know, we came from roughly five states, not just Stockbridge, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. or Albany, New York, you know. It was the whole watershed and corridor, mm-hmm. all the way up to the St. Lawrence Seaway, you know, the east side of Lake Champlain, and then up to Lake George on the western side, you know, where we met with the Haudenosaunee and the Mohawk people.
Is Mahikanuk a word that you, is that, you identify with or use? Is that?
Yeah. So, you know, we just say we're Mohicans, but, you know, Mohikaniak, you know, mm-hmm. and that was the original word for the word, for the Hudson River.
Yeah.
And it refers to the meaning of the waters that are never still, people of the waters are never still. Right. So that always references that our relationship to the river, you know, and the fish and survival, or sustenance, I guess, you know, sustenance to carry a culture.
Well, I'm curious, when did you first come to the Hudson Valley?
I hadn't came here until I was 43 years old, okay. I don't think, you know, and I was thinking last night, I always had this, when I stayed at my grandma's house, I always slept on the couch, and she had this picture of the Hudson. It was always above the couch, you know. And she just kept that just for a reference, you know. We still have the picture.
Yeah. Nice. That's awesome.
Well, it sounds like, so once again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Nature Nuggets, and we're talking with Matt Putnam, who is a member of the Muncie tribe, and we're also have in the studio today Chris Bowser with the DEC, and we're talking about an incredible event that is happening today and tomorrow down in New Paltz, and I know a lot of people don't listen to the full hour, so I want to really repeat this invitation that it's an open programming, and there's going to be all kinds of opportunities to learn about the rich and complicated history of this region. And so I know there's going to be different things going on there. Before we got on the air, you two mentioned the building of a cooking shelter.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
So each year as we come back here in New Paltz, we try to add on to the, and I guess the right word is exhibit, you know, but, you know, we try to make it look like an actual American Indian settlement, you know, kind of like what it would have looked like, you know, 1600s when the Huguenots first came here. Mm-hmm. So we're slowly adding on. And so this year we just built a cooking shelter. It's always limited time and how many people can get here at a time. So it's just one small piece of the puzzle at a time. So as the years go on, I'm sure it's actually going to look like a real village, you know, but it takes time and it takes people to make a village, right? so
it's getting there.
Yeah, no, it's actually getting there. It's very surprising, you know. And but it's wonderful to have the it's not a clash of cultures. I'm trying to look for the better word, mm-hmm. you know, but it's nice to have everybody come together.
That's really an amazing event. And maybe tell us a little bit more about beyond that, you know, what might people experience if they bring themselves down there?
Well, diversity is what you're going to experience. Mm-hmm. You're going to have people shooting arrows on one side of the street, and you're going to have people fighting with swords on the other side of the street. So I meant it doesn't get much better than that unless they're both on the same street together, you know, in the middle.
Meanwhile, every kid in the Hudson Valley is like, I gotta go.
Yeah, right.
Well, it really is a unique thing. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the Huguenot Society, but I mean, I know a little bit about that history. But you know, how did this event? What's the vision behind it, and how did this event come to be?
I cannot truthfully answer that. Okay, but
well, how about for yourself?
For myself, mm-hmm. It's education. It's just educating the mainstream, not just on American Indian issues, just on society in general. And by everybody coming together, willingly coming together to just take a small part, even if it's just a walk through and no conversation, it goes so far in the world of education and how close we are, even though we feel so far away,
I'm wondering, if there's folks who are listening who, would want to support your work, what other ways that folks can do that?
Well, reaching directly out to Huguenot Street itself, or Caesars Ford Theater in Xenia, Ohio. Either way, is participation, or support.
Right. Much of the work that you do, there's kind of the two different parts of it. You talk about reaching more kind of quote unquote mainstream, and having people realize the past and also the very real lived presence of American Indian history. But also another part of your work is engaging with youth to try to remember and kind of resurrect their own history. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that looks like and what some of your experiences have been engaging young folks in your community.
Well, when a little bit younger here, I do have a boxing gym, yeah, but I haven't had it open in a while. And but the main thing was just getting children in the door. And it didn't necessarily have anything to do with culture. It was just getting kids in the door, spending time with them, making a difference, when you watch them do things, that you can see that they actually learned, teaching fundamentals. And then by teaching fundamentals and location, it leads to other conversations. But the main thing is just trying to create good young people to grow up,
Excellent. Are there folks coming? Are there young folks coming from your community to this event?
Yes, there are. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's quite a participation. Yeah. So yeah. In case you're wondering, talking about it's not just adults. Okay. Uh-huh. There's babies right out. Youth. Yep. There's total participation, and so yeah. So if you're thinking about should I bring my children, yeah. Please bring your children. They're gonna have a great time. They're gonna have a great time. They'll be able to talk to other youth. From what you call it? Distinct communities, I guess, is probably the technical term, but no one's any different than anybody else, You just live someplace else, that's all.
So this is an open invitation, right, for all weekend long. This is Huguenot Street.
10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday, and then 10 to 5 today, correct?
I think I thought it was 10 to 5. That sounds about
okay.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And no one's going to feel bad if you hang around afterward and visit,
Yeah. And Baz, are you involved in this event?
Am I involved in this event? Sort of as a friend. Yeah, I guess I am.
Yes. Bowser's a very helpful supporter. Okay. And he's made a lot happen for the kids. I mean, yesterday when we went down to the park there, it was wonderful. They got to actually... A couple of them got to grab a hold of a sturgeon and hold it up,
wow.
To see one. They were able to seine for fish, crabs, spend some time in the river. You had the canoeing trip in the afternoon, correct?
Yes, we did.
I had to miss out on that, but I heard
some adventures.
A very interesting adventure there. And I'm sure that'll come up for discussion and a few laughs later. But, I mean, it was just a wonderful experience for mostly the children to spend time in their traditional homelands. Mm.
And that's one of the things that, so the DEC, we have, we have with the Department of Environmental Conservation, and the thought is, oh, that's safeguarding the natural history of the Hudson River, in my case. But you don't safeguard the natural history without also including the cultural history, and especially, the many peoples of the Hudson Valley, past, present, and future. So it's been really wonderful, the program Matt's talking about is we... We got together pretty informally yesterday across the river at the Norrie Point Environmental Center, which is the headquarters of the research reserve you mentioned earlier. And we were able to pull a net through the water, and we don't know what we're going to catch. It's not a zoo where you know we know what's going to come up. It's always an adventure. It's an adventure for me. And so we have these shared adventures together of the magic of catching a little 8-inch eel or some blue claw crabs. And I'm picking on those two animals because, as we were talking about earlier, those are two animals that really connect the freshwater parts of the river to the saltwater parts of the river. And really bring home this the Mahikanituk or the Mahiakanuk, the waters that are never still. Mm-hmm. And you see an eel or you see a crab or you see a 6-foot sturgeon.
Yeah.
And those are a reminder of a bunch of things. Those are a reminder of we're all connected to the ocean. And it's a reminder of how we're all connected to these animals through sustenance. Even if we have to pause on that sustenance now because of some 20th century pollution issues, we still have to remember that, you know, one of the beauties of the Hudson River and one of the goals of working on the river is to connect people to the river and to bring the health of that river back to what it once was and what it can be again. So that is it's so wonderful to be out there in the river with community members from all communities and all ages, building those connections through the animals, through the waters, through this history that we have.
Oh, that's beautiful work, and I'm just in awe that you were able to actually not just see but interact with a sturgeon. They just feel like a living fossil almost. Yeah. You know, and the fact that they are here and mostly invisible to us, but it's so important to invoke them and know that they're here so that we can protect them.
Yeah, big shout out to our Hudson River Fisheries Unit that conducts research on Atlantic sturgeon through you know a big partnership with federal agencies and other universities. They were able to just sort of bring a sturgeon over, which the it's great. It's we're very lucky that Norrie Point happens to be very close to sturgeon spawning grounds. And so the research is happening right there at Norrie Point. So the fish are being caught and released right there at Norrie Point.
Wow.
And that's really just a luck of the draw.
Yeah.
It's a circumstance of being there. But it was really magical to be able to take a look at one of those beautiful fish briefly before that fish was very promptly put right back into the river to carry on with its life.
And the people don't realize that, you know, that the health of that river, like you were speaking about, That was the main food source of the entire area, you know, for eons, and it had not been depleted until colonization.
Yeah,
you know, but those sturgeon that he's specifically speaking about, those fed the people here, you know, and they were abundant and they were large, they were you know easy prey and a very nutritious food source.
Absolutely. Can you imagine the joy of catching a sturgeon and what that means like for sustenance and just and everything else? There's so many parts of that fish that are beautiful and connected, and you know, from its bony scutes to one of Matt's colleagues was explaining to me how the swim bladder of a sturgeon could still be used for mending and preparing traditional crafts, almost the way we would use like glue or duct tape, you know. So many useful cultural parts of that fish.
Yeah, the animals were, in any culture of the world, you know, that was our clothing, you know. And any part of the animal you could use, right down to, you could make even moccasins out of sturgeon, believe it or not.
That's incredible. Wow.
Sturgeon moccasins. Well, I would really encourage folks who might be listening, there are so many opportunities to get out and have lived experience on the water. Right here in Kingston, we have, with the Hudson River Maritime Museum, there's the little Solaris solar boat. And Justin Wexler, who was a guest on this show previously.
Justin was with us yesterday.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, Justin is an encyclopedia of cultural and, you know, knowledge about the people who and the life and traditions and ways of being. being, you know, for the centuries before colonization. And he's very prolific, but he does, I think, not every Thursday, but a lot of Thursdays, he will hold court, and just, you can go out in a small group on the little solar-powered boat onto the Hudson, and you can really ask him anything you want, and he will take you down a rabbit hole of knowledge. And it's a rare opportunity to have, you know, that kind of, you know, bank of historical knowledge just sort of at your fingertips. So definitely, if you have kids, bring them for sure. But I can't get enough. So that's a really cool opportunity. We also, of course, have the Sloop Clearwater, often based here in Kingston. And Bowser has a long, rich history. And if you haven't been out and had the experience of being on the Sloop Clearwater, especially if Bowser's on board, then you have not had, you know, a quintessential Hudson River experience.
And Laurel, I forgot my guitar today. I actually forgot it.
Well,
I'm so sorry.
We will have you back for some Pete Seeger songs. But the as Bowser was mentioning, the Sloop Clearwater, I think, has a special permit with the DEC so that they can throw a net overboard. And so part of the experience is they'll do that. They'll as you're sailing down the Hudson, and then they'll pull the net up, and then they have a aquarium tank where they put what's caught on there, and then you get an education about it. And it's just really a incredible combination of, you know, history of the environmental movement, ecology, you know, historic crafts. And then of course there's also the Rip Van Winkle too, which is a easy kind of accessible way to get out on the Hudson. You go by Nori Point and learn a bit of history. So
there's an opportunity,
please,
in here. So in addition to, obviously, to the New Netherlands Huguenot event this weekend, in a couple of weeks, if anybody's interested, everybody's hearing us talk about seining for fish, and you're like, wait, what? Can I do that? The answer is you absolutely can. Saturday, August 2nd is a cool event called the Great Hudson River Fish Count. And there's going to be sites up and down the Hudson River where you can go, and for totally free and family friendly, you can get down to the river and you can put on some waders and pull a seine net. I'll actually be right here in the city of Kingston at Kingston Point Park, the Kingston Point Beach, from 4 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, August 2nd. And if you're in Dutchess County and like, oh, what are we doing in Dutchess County? Fear not. You can go to the Nori Point Environmental Center from 1 to 2:30, same day, Saturday, August 2nd. And if you want to find out more about that, if you go on to herner.org, H-R-N-E-R-R.org, you can look up Hudson River Fish Count and find out all the different sites that are going on that day.
Great. And it's just a small sampling of the opportunities that we have to get outside and experience the incredible ecology around here.
Yeah.
We're going to take one more quick break to hear some words from the community.
This is a pride moment for Radio Kingston.
When I think about pride, I think about, resistance. The first brick thrown was by a Black trans woman. It makes sense that the most marginalized within the queer community, within queer and trans community, were people who were experiencing houselessness and doing sex work, and really, like, even within queer and trans communities, still pushed to the margins. And so they had the biggest fight in them, and still do to this day.
This has been a Pride Moment from Radio Kingston.
Hi, this is Lorraine from the Kingston Farmers Market. We're open every Saturday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the county courthouse parking lot. The market is bigger than ever this year, with over 80 vendors this season. We have all of your favorite vendors with fruit, vegetables, eggs, meat, fish, cheese, and plenty of new ones, too. With live music every week, community groups, and seasonal events. Our Pop Bucks program lets kids try new veggies. We accept SNAP and offer Fresh Connect checks. Find us at the info booth to find out more. That's the Kingston Farmers Market in the county courthouse parking lot, uptown, Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on everything the market has to offer. Or visit us online at kingstonfarmersmarket.org.
Radio Kingston.
Muchas voces.
Muchas voces.
Muchas voces.
Una comunidad.
Hola amigues, I am Mariel Fiori. Every Monday through Friday morning from 10 to 11 a.m., we have La Voz con Mariel Fiori here at Radio Kingston. It's an inspiring hour of interviews, commentary, good music, current issues, and information. Knowledge is power. And it's all en español. La Voz with Mariel Fiori. Every weekday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, or anytime at radiokingston.org.
Welcome back to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and today we are talking with a couple of incredible guests. We have in the studio with us Matt Putnam, who's a member of the Stockbridge Muncie Band of Mohican American Indians. And we also have Chris Bowser with the Hudson River Estuary Program and the New York State DEC. And the main thing we're kind of highlighting today is an incredible event that's going on in New Paltz this weekend. It's actually underway right now and will be going until this afternoon, and then it'll be happening all day tomorrow. And it's a opportunity to really experience a very unique deep dive and perspective on the incredible history of this region. And I know folks kind of, you know, tune in and tune out. And if you pot up part of this conversation and you'd like to hear the whole thing, this episode, like all of our episodes, will be archived at radiokingston.org by tomorrow. We also have emerging Instagram presence. So our handle there is at HV Nature Nuggets. And you can email the show directly if you want to suggest a guest or ask a nature question. That's naturenuggets at radiokingston.org. And as of this month, we are also now out and about on the podcast platforms from Spotify to Apple. So you can find us there as well. So Matthew, I want to ask you again to just say a little bit about if folks, you know, maybe hadn't heard, what might folks experience, you know, if they come down to the Huguenot Street this weekend in New Paltz?
Well, this weekend specifically, today, tomorrow, you're going to experience just a touch of the old world. What was here in the 1600s, you know, as of, it doesn't matter what culture it is, you're going to be able to see it. Pretty much touch it, some of it, you know, swords, arrows, bows, atlatls. You're gonna be able to see cooking shelters, the way American Indian life was at that time. You'll also be able to see the traditional dress of the colonists, depending on what, you know, culture they came from, Dutch, French, Portuguese. Everything will be there. But I'd also like to mention that if you're interested in the original people of this area, pre-colonization, you can look up the, just do a simple Google search or whatever search engine you use for the Stockbridge Muncie Community Band of Mohican Indians. And that'll be a good resource for you to move forward. And that'll actually, you know, you can tie into the other groups that are local.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up. It really is a remarkable website, mohican.com, and there is just so much about, you know, history and you know, past and present, but it's a really accessible and illuminating site, so incredible resource to check out.
Yes, I just encourage you to do that, and you can branch out from there if you're truly have a passion for history.
Yeah.
Well, what a unique opportunity. Yeah, once again, really encourage folks, get out to New Paltz today or tomorrow. And there are scheduled programs and there's different things happening throughout the weekend, but it's an open invitation at any point to just come on in and walk through and engage or learn and participate in what might be happening at the moment that you arrive.
And I think it's also always, I mean, I think every program I've ever been on is just, and Laurel, you know, hats off to you. This is such a great program to just remind everybody to get outside and to connect with the natural history. And that is a wonderful conduit to connect to cultural history. And like you said, that doesn't just happen in lovely parks that take a while to drive to.
Yeah.
That happens in your backyard, that happens in your neighborhood. People and nature work together everywhere.
Yeah, well, thank you, Bowser. And I, with our remaining moment, want to say again that if you don't have plans tonight, or if they're not as cool as this, you could cancel them. The Wild Earth is having their big Moss and Moonlight Gala, and it's going to be at the Liberty View Farm in Highland. And it's going to be a beautiful farm-to-table dinner. There's going to be, it's in an orchard, and the whole thing is about supporting nature accessibility for young people and families. So come on out to that, wildearth.org. All right, well, there's our cue. Thank you so much, Matt, for being here and for the work you do, and Bowser as well. And get on down to New Paltz if you can this weekend, folks.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Dear wildlife, I give myself to you completely.